Tape 1, Side 2, continuing our interview with Mr. Fritz Siegel.
Well, I was going to mention this contract that existed between the Musicians Union and the radio stations. The contract was they had to have a certain amount of players on staff at all times. Then there were contractual problems, and the union had to back off, and instead of having 45 on staff, they brought it down to 25. Then a couple of years later, they had to bring it down to 18. So the smell in the air was that the staff business was fading out. It was no longer, you know, in fact, I remember when Galicia told me that this was going to be the last year of staff. What they were going to do after this was hire musicians whenever they needed them on a daily basis or a weekly basis, whatever, but not contractually throughout the full year. So the smell was already that this was going to be fading out, and the commercial business wasn't getting that good in Chicago anymore. I think most of the commercial work was being done in New York and in Hollywood. And as you know, if you watch the Tonight program with Johnny Carson, you'll see that the Tonight Orchestra, you know, with Doc Severinsen, that's not, used to be on staff, but now they're no longer. They're hired by the program. You know. Well, when I smelled that this was coming on, looked like I had to go into... there was a year that I missed. There was one year, shortly after my second marriage, that I was asked to come to Baltimore Symphony Orchestra as their concertmaster. Which I did. I asked Joe Galicia to let me off for that season, again, about a 25-week season. He said, okay. I forget what year it was. I'll tell you what year it was. I'll go by my second wife. I have a son now who's 33, so it's got to be 33 years ago. He was just being born at the time. 33 years ago. 87, deduct 33. 54, so it must have been 54 season that I went in Baltimore. And I must say, playing was fine, but I didn't enjoy that. 33 years ago, Baltimore is much nicer now, I'm sure, as Pittsburgh is 21 years ago. It's much nicer now than it was when I first joined. But Baltimore was very depressing to me. It's an icky town. I didn't really like it. So I stayed 1 year, knowing that I could come back to NBC, which I did. But doing all kinds of things in the interim with all this that I've been doing, I was playing chamber music concerts with trios, with quartets, with this and that. So, as I said before, when I saw that this business of the staff was fading out, I had to... And a very dear friend of mine who worked at NBC with me many years ago, and it was 1942, was a member named Samuel Thaveu, who was concertmaster here at that time. And somehow we found out that Sammy was going to leave here, and there was going to be a concertmaster opening here. And this was just at the time when NBC was closing up. I decided to come here. I mean, I don't remember who I talked to, but I made had a date to play for Steinberg audition. And I did. And a few weeks later, I think Sidney Cohn, do you remember the name Sidney Cohn?
Yes.
Yeah. Sidney was personnel manager of the orchestra. Very, very dear friend of mine over later on when I got here, very helpful to me, called me and said that Steinberg had decided he would like me to come. So we had to do our contract business, and of course, 21 years ago, salaries were not what they are now, you know, it was quite different. But anyway, I was glad I did. I came and have been with the orchestra ever since. But of course, when I first started, the seasons, well, I think the first season when I joined in 66 was only a 42-week season. Fortunately, I had my association with the Grand Park Orchestra in Chicago had continued for many years. I had always the summers that I would play that, you know.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, well, that was an orchestra that was combined of musicians for that season that later on became, many members became into the Lyric Opera Orchestra, which is now still in existence. So for the 42 weeks, that was my first season here, 42 weeks, I had 8-10 weeks left yet. So the season at Grand Park was 8 weeks in the summer, so I was able to go back to do that. I did that only for a few years, because as the years went on, the season for the Pittsburgh Symphony became longer and longer. It went from 42, then to 44, then to 50, whatever. Eventually, it was all year round consuming, so I had no chance to go back to Grand Park anymore. And of course, as you know, now it's for many, many years, it's been 52 weeks, you know, with 8 weeks vacation, which all symphonies over the years, all the major orchestras have come to this. Years ago, as I said, when we were talking about 1936, 37, 38, Chicago Symphony only had a 28-week season. That was including the Ravinia Festival that they had. So it was really, you know, symphony musicians didn't have it too good in those days, you know, because a lot of them went into insurance business to furnish their, you know, to keep up the income of for the year, because they couldn't live just on 28-week salary and then do nothing for whatever the weeks were left. But little by little, the symphony, as I said, the NBC, the staff orchestras went down, the symphonies started going up. And it's been that way ever since, at least, I'm 21 years here, I think it's been that way at least 10, 12 years that for a while there it was, I remember a remark, I think we had a 51-week season one time, which was so ridiculous, you know. And I remember it was brought to the attention of management and everybody when we had a pension fund concert, and I believe Jack Benny was our guest. And when he heard, we were talking backstage, and he said, 51? What, are they crazy? He said, my goodness, but if they can pay you for 51, they should certainly call it a full year, 52-week contract, you know. I don't know whether he was the one who was influential into it, but it certainly showed, that it was kind of ridiculous. If you can have a 51-week season, there's no reason why you can't call it a full year, 52-week season. Which it is now for many years, I say. And, let's see, what have I left out? Now, we covered that pretty well, except that I have, just to cover the whole thing, I have five children.
Just a moment.
Two ex-wives.
Five children.
Five grandchildren, too.
Ah, that's lovely. Let me hear about them.
Five grandchildren. Mm-hmm. May we have your children's names, please?
Sure. Age coming down. Oldest, Karen. K-A-R-E-N.
And she is where, doing what?
Chicago.
She's in Chicago.
She's married with two children. And does a little teaching in the mornings for early Jewish school, Anshe Emet, I think it's called, or something. It's at a synagogue right near her. Well, not that she's not religiously Jewish,
no,
but
it's a nice part-time job.
Yes, from 9 in the morning till 12, something like that. Next one is Laurel. L-A-U-R-E-L.
Where does she live?
In Chicago. She's the mother of twins. Fortunately, right now, not married, hasn't been married for some time, but the possibility of her getting married a second time is very possible within the next year or so.
Good. How old are the twins?
Twins are 18. Next marriage. Well, you got my first wife's name, Bernice. Yeah,
Bernice. Yes.
Second wife, Mary Jane. One word, M-A-R-I-J-A-N-E. Cellist. First child, Paul. Second child.
How old is Paul?
Paul is now about 33. Mm-hmm. Second daughter, Lisa. Elise, really. We call her Lisa. E-L-I-S-E.
Yeah.
Lives with her husband in San Francisco. She's just turned... 30. She's 30. She'll be 31 in September.
Yeah.
Next son, Peter. Youngest. He's 27. Lives in outside of Chicago. Lives in Evanston. Is working for an architectural firm. He went to Ohio State University here in Columbus. That's it. No more kids.
What does Paul do?
Paul is in the Navy.
Oh. A career man.
Hmm?
A career man.
It seems that way now, yeah. But he has been with the Navy. He was in the Air Force before that. He was living with me, not in this apartment. Before buying this condominium, this was all rental. I rented an apartment one floor down, 507. And I was going to get a larger apartment for us both, but it turned out he didn't want to go to the University of Pittsburgh. He wanted to go into the Air Force. So that's what he did. Then I just stayed in one-room apartment until I bought this. Two children of Karen's, two children, the twins of Laurel's, and I have one other granddaughter who was just born last year. I expect to see her in June. Maybe they live in Hawaii.
Oh. Whose child is she?
Which one? In Hawaii.
The one in Hawaii? Yes. Is my son's daughter.
Oh, your son.
My son, Paul.
Paul has a daughter.
Yeah, just about a year old.
Oh, that's nice.
I think right now, year May 24th, I think she was born.
Yeah.
That's it, isn't it? That's all the mishpacha.
That's lovely. We have one in Evanston, too. It's nice to visit there.
Oh, yeah. I was there last year to visit right after she was born. She was only... I was in June. She was born in May. I saw her when she was a month old. I haven't seen her since, so I'm hoping
to go back. Oh, surely. Tell us something about the conductors here in Pittsburgh that you've worked under and the people you've worked with.
Well, we started, of course, Steinberg was musical director for Pittsburgh Symphony for many years until he got rather ill and one thing led to another. But so many, I can't even remember. Guest conductors that come in sometimes
course.
For 1 week, for 2 weeks.
We're just thinking in terms of the permanent.
The permanent conductors, well, but there's only two really since I've been here, Steinberg and then Previn. And now, of course, Mazel has been appointed, but he won't take on the full responsibility of the orchestra until the 88 season, which is a year after the next season. But I no longer will be here then.
Did anyone tell us about them, any experiences you had with them that might be interesting to...
Oh, I had wonderful experiences with Steinberg. He was a great musician and enjoyed very much. He was a wonderful guy, wonderful man. With his quirks, of course, they all have them, including me. But he was very warm with me. I could tell him stories that he would enjoy, sometimes a little off-color stories, which he enjoyed even more. I'm getting hungry, my stomach's barking. I don't know how many years Steinberg, from 66, do you know when Previn came here?
He was here for 7 years.
7 years, but he's been gone already for what?
2 years.
Just two?
Mm-hmm.
All right, 7 and 2 is 9 years ago.
So that makes it 78.
78 that Previn came here? Well, but there was a period of before Previn where I think the orchestra had just stayed on guest conductor for a season before engaging Previn, definitely.
Yes.
So Steinberg was here until 77, 76, somewhere around there. In other words, if it was 76, I was with him for 10 years. He was here with, 10 years while I was with the orchestra. And then Previn came. He was here for 7 years. Previn and I got along just great. I had great admiration for Steinberg in a different way than Previn. He didn't know it, but I knew about Previn, and I told him about it when he was here. When I was working at CBS in Chicago on Michigan Boulevard at the Wrigley Building, you know the Wrigley Building. You know Chicago?
A little bit.
And the studios of the CBS were at that time in the Wrigley Building. And many times I would walk, as you come out of the Wrigley Building, you want to go to the IC, the Illinois Central, which is the train that takes you only south. It didn't go north. I was living on the south side of Chicago at the time. Pass over the bridge, right over the Chicago River, and there's a place called the London House, which was a jazz joint. It was known as one of the... there was a place in Chicago called the Blue Note, which was a jazz downtown. And the London House was like a restaurant, but it also they always had very fine jazz musicians. Well, I used to walk across and see Andre Previn and his trio playing there. And I must say, having been a classical violinist, but at the same time, I did get tremendous experience in commercial music, playing at CBS and NBC for so many years. I became very much interested in jazz. Not play, but listen, and I like jazz, and I like the improvisational genius that it takes sometimes to make these things so interesting. You take a tune, simple tune, and you elaborate. It's like I'm taking an arranger, you give him a Johnny Comes Marching Home, like a Morton Gould does, you know, and he makes it into a tremendous, important and interesting piece. Well, Previn, I used to listen to, and he played sensational jazz, just sensational, very, very beautiful and great. And so I told him, I said, you know, we go back, I remember seeing your name, and I was at CBS, to walk across and see you at the London House. But anyhow, he was a very regular guy, and we got along just great, and I enjoyed it. He got into some hassles with Marshall Turkin, with the bit, that's why the whole thing. But I'm sure the orchestra, you can ask, you know, if you ask 100 people in the orchestra about different conductors, they'll all give you different answers, different reasons, this and that, even like this. So I enjoyed Previn, and most of the guest conductors, we've had some not so good, some very good, you know.
Give us some impressions. Nobody's going to hear this. Everything's confidential. Feel free to say, because it's not going to be published in the headlines.
I can't even give you definite. All I can tell you that, how shall I say? We use a cute phrase. You know, conductors use batons. It's a piece of wood. Batons don't care who uses them. I mean, that's a phrase that we use, because to become a conductor takes more than just a baton. Anybody, you can buy that in the dime store. So we get many of them that we feel, for some reason or another, which may be usually egotistical, they take up on a conductor. People have asked me many times, you know, I've had so much experience, I've worked with so many conductors, what? Want to conduct? I said, no. I don't particularly want to conduct. Sometimes I get a yearning to conduct because of the experience that I've had with so many musicians, so many conductors over the period of years, is when we get sometimes a very bad one. And then I'm angry, you know, I feel, well, why does he have the audacity to stand up there and want to do this when he doesn't, first of all, he doesn't have the talent, he doesn't have the musicianship, he doesn't have the background, he hasn't studied. Conducting is, some people, you know, we say it's an easy thing, but it's not. To be a good conductor, to be good of anything, in anything, it ain't easy, you know. And as we always say, a baton can't play out of tune.
There was a great deal of discussion about Michael Tilton Thomas.
Was there?
The possibility of his being named the permanent conductor.
I think I remember hearing something about that, yeah.
Any reaction among the musicians about that, I think?
No, I don't think so. The orchestra likes Michael Tilton Thomas, and he's a very talented young man, and he's a very good conductor. But I can't tell you the reasons. I can just assume why they went ahead with Mazel. Mazel had been conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra for 10 years, then was assigned a position in Vienna with the opera there, got into trouble. And here he was, he's made a tremendous amount of recordings, has a tremendous reputation name, and he is a very fine conductor, studied with good conductors.
I knew Michael Tilton Thomas's grandparents.
Uh-huh.
They were
Tomaszewski.
Jewish theater.
Yes, yes, I know. Sure. I remember Tomaszewski in the Jewish theater. That was what? Who was another
Boris.
big Jewish? Joseph Schildkraut. Remember that name?
Yeah, surely.
What was it? Molly Picon was a big, big Jewish actress at the time in Jewish theater. Hebrew. Well, no, it was Jewish Yiddish theater.
Yiddish theater.
Michael Tilson Thomas is a very talented young man. I think perhaps the Pittsburgh Symphony want to be sure they get somebody already with a good reputation. Michael Tilson Thomas has a good reputation. He hasn't really been associated with any orchestra
for a length of time.
And he's been guest conducting a lot. I'm sure makes very good living. And I guess when they had to think about Michael Tilson Thomas and Lauren Mazel, who played the game right, he played very cool, casual, didn't, oh, I don't want the job, but if you offer him the big enough money, he'll take it, you know.
And they did.
And they did, yes. I think, well, that's my personal opinion.
Okay. Don't worry, as I say.
That's too much money. Well, I don't know. The way I look at it is too much money. Because the star system nowadays is so, you know, the basketball players and ball players are making outrageous money, you know. They draw the crowds in boxing and in tennis and in football and baseball. They do draw the crowds, and they figure they can afford to pay him $1 million a season to play with this baseball club because they're going to make up that million by, if they know that so-and-so and so-and-so is playing on that team, they'll draw more people. Sinatra comes to town with the reputation of Sinatra, you'll get $100,000 for one night. Well, they'll make $300,000 on him, so they can afford to give him $100,000. That's the way it is in all the businesses, you know, but when you think of, first of all, the conductor, his salary, whatever it is, which we've heard, the first season that he's coming here, he's only going to conduct 4 weeks. The second season, maybe 8 weeks. The third season, maybe 12 weeks. 12 weeks a year, 4 weeks a year, 8 weeks a year, for that kind of money. Seems, you know, it's out of kilter with people being laid off at steel plants, people out of jobs, this and that, you know, it seems a little bit, but that's the star system for you. They figure they evidently, you know, it's true, this orchestra happens to be the best endowed orchestra in the country. This orchestra, Pittsburgh Symphony. They've done it, I don't know how they did it, but over a period of years, they have a tremendous endowment program that other symphonies are very jealous of, you know. But that's the way it goes, that's, you know. But I'm not involved in it after the season anyhow anymore.
Were there some of the other conductors that you can tell something about, any feelings about Charles Trois?
Charles Dutoit was being mentioned too. Very gifted conductor. I think, you know, conductors are strange animals as musicians are. It usually should takes a combination. No conductor can please everybody in the orchestra. And no orchestra can please the conductor sometimes. But it does take a rapport. Steinberg had a very good rapport in a strange way. Steinberg...
Tell us about Steinberg. Keep on about Steinberg.
Well, I think I would say in the years that we worked together with the orchestra and Steinberg, my feeling is, I must say, that I think everybody in the orchestra, well, I shouldn't say everybody, I would say a good 90% of the orchestra liked him very much. There may have been a few that didn't, but I had the feeling that everybody was called the old man, you know, which is a nice, any orchestra that works with a conductor for a long period of time, I'm sure they used to, Philadelphia used to call Ormandy the old man. They used to call Stokowski the old man. Toscanini was the old man for the NBC Orchestra in New York.
Fritz Reiner was here for a long time.
I'm sure they called him the old man after, you know. And Steinberg, in my association with the orchestra, was referred to as the old man. Rightly so. It wasn't because he was old. It was because he was with the orchestra for, well, many years, you know, before, I don't know how many years he was with the orchestra here. At least well over 20.
Oh, yes.
Well over 20. Well, he was here with me for 10, and I think he was here longer with Sammy Davey, who was here in the orchestra, I think, for 17 years, but that was already starting. I think Sammy started with Reiner here, when Reiner was still here.
One of the problems that seems to be presenting itself with the orchestra, the musicians,
Talking about this orchestra or any orchestra?
Pittsburgh Orchestra. Yeah. Is the relationship with the bureaucracy. How did Steinberg get on?
Could you explain that to me a little? I don't know what you mean by...
For example, the problems that Previn had with management.
Yes.
And the board.
Yes.
How did Steinberg get along with management?
I would assume that he got... Well, I'm sure he got along very well, because he was... Steinberg was very close friends with... Do you remember the name Charles Denby?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, Denby was president of these, wasn't he? Later, John Engel. Remember that name?
Right, I know John Engel, too.
Yes. I always had a feeling that Engel and Steinberg were very close. Okay. I had the feeling that Denby was very close with... I think Denby was head when I first joined the orchestra. After Denby, then Engel. But I do remember that Steinberg had them in his corner, you know, and they were very, very helpful when Steinberg, you know, wanted to talk about this. He, you know, he got what he wanted. I don't think he asked for any outlandish things, but it was just for creating the orchestra, to build it up, the longer seasons, better pay, you know. So the rapport, I think, with Steinberg and the bureaucracy, as you call it, I think was handled very, very nicely. Previn was a younger man when he came. I must tell you, though, that I've been completely out of the picture of... Maybe it's because of the type of person I am. I've been living in this building for... I think I know one... Well, I know a few people I say hello to. I don't know their names. I don't know the last name. I know them in the building. I'm pretty much a loner. I don't... I don't mean to sound I'm unfriendly. I'm not unfriendly, but I for one reason or another, I have some very dear friends in the orchestra. But you know, you can't be friends with everybody. So you, and I stayed away from the mechanics of the relationship between the board and the Ladies Auxiliary Club and this that. It goes on with the symphony. I stay out of that, and I feel I enjoy what I do, and I try to do it as best I can, and. That other business that goes on in the office and the behind in the board of directors and this and that, and we've had in the last couple of years we've had three presidents that go by the wayside every couple of weeks. There's another new president. We had not long ago. I remember Buckley, and Buckley something happened. What was he with Allegheny International?
Allegheny International.
Yeah, that had something happened. Then we had some guy named Christian Lanch. Then all of a sudden I hear that Tankersley. Was head of the president or something. To this day, now I don't think it's Tankersley anymore. I don't know who it is now.
It's the old boys club.
Is that what it is? Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I say, I know the names. I've met Buckley once, I think. I've met Christian Lance, very nice gentleman. We had a long talk one time. Not pretending to, I forget what, but it was very helpful, very nice. The other one, Tankersley, I don't think I've ever met. And the one who is now, I don't think I've ever met. But as I say, I can't partake in that end of the business with them because it's not my cup of tea. As long as I like to do what I do, and if I do it satisfactorily, they keep me. When you get to be 70, they tell you, you know. And I certainly didn't want to. I understand that somebody just mentioned to me that some people in the Philadelphia Orchestra now have turned 70. And they have been, you know, they have a good pension coming to them. But some of them feel... Really, as I do, that I don't want to retire. But, and I feel well enough to still keep on playing and perform what's necessary for me to perform. But some of these people in the Philadelphia Orchestra are starting a lawsuit because, you know, it is against the national right. law that you they can't retire you, and they have to prove that you are incompetent.
Incapable.
Yeah, incapable.
Incompetent, right.
Incompetent, or for reasons of... drinking or something, you show up drunk on the job or something, you know, then they can prove that they want to release you. But I'm not going to bother. Marshall Turkin, that is, has been very nice, as you, I think you may know, that this past season, this being last year, the symphony last year, Marshall told me, was going to do me the honor of having a concerto commissioned for me, which happened, and I played it last Christmas. which was quite an occasion for me, because I had, for the occasion, I had two ex-wives, someplace I must have a picture of the whole group, my two ex-wives, all my children, and all my grandchildren, except one, my son Paul and his wife from Hawaii, it actually couldn't come, and that little baby. But all the others, I had the twins and all
wonderful.
Of them here. I had so
yeah.
I put up three of them here, then I got apartments for them at the Allegheny Center across the, you know.
Yes.
And it was just a wonderful, you know, time to have my whole family here for that occasion, which was a concerto written by a young composer, Stephen Albert, who won the Pulitzer Prize in 85 for a work for a symphony orchestra that he was commissioned for. I think the National Orchestra in Washington.
End of side 2, tape 1, to be continued on tape 2.